kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm alive, and I know I say that all the time, but it's really a celebration to actually be functional right now. So yeah. I'm rolling.
Last couple of shows, you haven't been functioning as well as you normally do.
Ooh, I can at least talk, which is kind of important when you do a podcast.
Very true, which, by the way, this is your last episode of the year.
It is.
We've only got one more after this, and we're taking like 2 weeks off, which is exciting for me. And before we get too much further in, I got a quick shout out to Swizzlers in chat for not only dropping 100 biddies, but for subbing for his fourth month in a row as well.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
We appreciate you, Swizzlers.
I'm so non-functioning, I didn't even realize I didn't have Twitch open yet.
I am so proud of you.
I'm just not doing it today.
Yes, Swizzlers is good people. And speaking of good people, we are being joined, Chris Dupuy of Codename Entertainment. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on today.
It is a pleasure to get you on here. We covered your game last week, Idle Champions. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Sure. Idle Champions is a Dungeons & Dragons strategy management game. And when you play Idle Champions, your job is to take control of these heroes of D&D lore. You start out with 13 of them to start, but then as the game grows, you can collect more. And you need to build your formation. You need to destroy monsters, collect gold, and use that gold to recruit and level up new adventurers. And with each adventurer you add to your formation, you unlock new abilities. And they're all formation-based, so that it depends where they are in the formation. And every adventurer has a different makeup of the formation. So there's a lot of depth in strategy, not only of who your normal go-tos are, who you have really well geared, who works well with each other. It's a really deep and enjoyable game. We're really excited about it. We just released on Xbox and PS4 this week.
I got to say, it is impressively deep for an idle game.
Yeah.
Normally, idle games, you know, it's just, you know, click here or there, and that's about it. There's actual strategy and depth and adventures and loot and equipment and potions and blacksmith contracts and just tons of other shit in this game. There's just so much in this game. How did you cram so much in here?
Well, it's been a growing system. So before I came to Codename, Codename's been in business for 10 years. They just celebrated the 10-year anniversary, and oh, wow. they've been making games for the past 10 years, and each one is building on the learnings from the last one. So Idle Champions had a lot to learn from its predecessor, Crusaders of the Lost Idols, which is another idle game that we have that's currently available on web, mobile, and PC. They took a lot of learnings from Crusaders of the Lost Idols and added the theme of D&D and really diving into that sort of fantasy adventure world, and really knocked it out of the park. I was a part of the Wizards of the Coast crew when CNE came to us and pitched the game, and eventually I moved over to CNE, and now I'm helping to manage the game, and it's a ton of fun.
You jump ship.
Yeah. there were some other circumstances in between, but yeah, it's super exciting to be a part of Codename. We are a small group of about 18 folks up in Victoria, British Columbia, and it's a hardworking crew, and I'm super proud to be working with them.
What is your role at the company?
So my role is live services manager for Idle Champions, and specifically, I manage the content pipeline and all of the promotions and all of the planning. So everyone at Codename wears different hats at different times. The primary point of my job is to make sure that every week we have new content. Every single week, with the exception of event weeks, because those run for about 10 days. But every week we want to be releasing new content, whether that's new champions, new adventures, new gear, new variants. Every single week since September of 2017, we've been releasing new content. And it's my job to make sure that we continue to add on content and make it exciting for everyone that's playing the game.
Damn. So it's been over a year of new content.
Yeah. Yeah. We launched September 7th on Steam. I believe in May or June of this year, we moved on to tablets on iPad and Android tablets. And as of last week, we are now on both PlayStation 4 and Xbox.
What led to coming to consoles?
A lot of different things. It's For Codename, it's learning opportunities, because this will be our first game on Xbox and PlayStation 4, two brand new platforms for us. But also, we've just seen such great growth and excitement on the game from all of our other platforms that we just wanted to open it up to more players. We constantly have players telling us that they don't play on their PC. They're console gamers. And so we wanted to make sure that we could reach as many interested D&D gamer fans as possible.
Well, you reached us.
Yeah, I'm not even familiar with D&D, and like just beyond knowing what it is and what it consists of. And I'm always like, oh, well, that's too much for me. But I had a blast. I'm sitting there going, I don't know what any of these things are, but I'm pressing B and my finger's going to fall off, and I'm good with it.
That's awesome.
How did the whole D&D thing come together?
That is a great question. So Codename has previously brought out games of their own IP. I don't know the particular decisions that led to them wanting to work in the D&D world. I know that everyone in the office is a huge D&D fan, and you can see our CEO, Eric Jordan, talking whenever he gets the opportunity of his history with the brand. But I think it was a combination of a great design idea and just the perfect execution with the D&D brand that led to Eric working really hard to bring the D&D world to life.
And you said you were working at Wizards when they came to you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was part of the digital licensing team. So my partner, John File, and I were working with Wizards of the Coast. And I know that Eric and John talked on multiple occasions, and eventually they got to pitch the game to the D&D team and get it approved and get all the legalese dealt with. And they brought out the game with incredible speed. I think if I remember correctly, we, from the time the ink was dried on the contract, I think the game was launched in like 4 months. It was crazy.
Holy
but
shit.
Again, that, wow. Yeah, that speaks to how hard and how great the team is, because everyone works together. Everyone helps each other out. And as I mentioned earlier, everyone wears different hats, because it's just, depending on the day, we got to deal with what needs to be dealt with, and everyone pitches in where they can.
4 months is impressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of great artists that have been working on weekly service games for many years now. So they're used to churning out amazing content at rapid speed.
I think I got a hand cramp just thinking about it.
How long does
it? So you guys,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, so you guys have been playing for a week or so, or 2 weeks on Xbox. But what are you guys enjoying most about it? I'm curious.
I just love the atmosphere of the game. I love that it's an idle game, because I enjoyed Clicker Heroes. We mentioned that in the review, because it's the closest thing you could compare to on Xbox is Clicker Heroes. I really enjoyed that game. It's fun to just have in the background and have something going on. Have a distraction while you're like on your phone or something else, just killing time. And I love that it brought in RPG elements.
Mm-hmm.
Cole, what did you like?
For me, it's just the availability of like, oh, I don't have a lot of time, but I can just check in right now. and see how everything's progressed without actually being there. Like, I love that as the whole idol aspect of it. Just like, oh, surprise, you did shit while you weren't here. And I'm like, yes! I did laundry, but I was also still productive at games. And sometimes you just need to balance both.
Absolutely.
And I love that, just that functionality is even a thing, that I could just come back and be like, ta-da, you progressed. You weren't even on your ass today.
Yeah, when we've seen a lot of players on PC play it at work, they'll have it in the background, and they'll jump in every few minutes and update something and then go back to work. And it was interesting because we wanted to see how the console players would take to that sort of play style. And I found, or Eric, our CEO, pointed it out, and I've been playing it at home for the past couple of nights. It's perfect for Netflixing and chilling.
Because, oh, God, yes.
How many times do you take a break while you're watching something on Netflix? You know, someone woke up, someone's got to go get a snack, and all of a sudden you're sitting there for 10 minutes with nothing to do. You know, you just jump right back into it, and it's great.
I've actually done that a lot. Like, oh, because the kids are home for Christmas break now. So these last couple of days, it's like, okay, well, I'm playing something, you know, mature, and oh well, now everybody's awake. Okay, well, I guess I'm gonna go check on my heroes or see, yeah, go see what's going on, see if my dwarf has done anything or if he's just got his dumb ass killed.
I should
buy him an upgrade. The funny thing to me too is that, like, I tell myself, okay, I'm just gonna go check, see what it's done while it's been idling, and then you just find yourself going, 20 minutes later, I'm still buying upgrades and clicking to collect gold, and I don't know how it happened, but I'm not mad about it.
I mean, it's to me, that's awesome to hear, because the team has worked so hard to make a game that's not only engaging and not only fills that whole idle gameplay style, but is also just super fun. And to me, like, I jump in for a few minutes, I'll read the dialogue, and just wait as you guys go further in the dialogue. The adventures just get more and more hilarious as you go on, and there's recurring jokes that just keep coming back, and it's just awesome. Lost my train of thought, but yeah, it's you know, you jump into the dialogue, you play around with the formation to try and maximize your DPS so you can get as far as you can when you're not focusing on it. And there's just so many little things to do while the team is just going through and cleaving through baddies.
There was a point yesterday, I think it was, where I had checked in on it, and I was like, my husband's like, oh, are you ready to cook dinner? And I was like, yes, just let me finish my upgrades. And then a few minutes later,
he's
like, we're hungry. Are you going to come cook dinner? And I'm like, can we just microwave something?
That's when you delegate. You say, yeah, it doesn't sound like you're doing anything. You can make the dinner. I'm doing this.
I'm busy at the moment. I have to prepare for the show tomorrow. And then also, I forgot that I was supposed to review another game because I was clicking. Okay.
So it's your fault that she forgot to review something.
No.
I'm totally letting him take the blame if he wants to.
You know, you laugh, but the joke around the office is, and on Twitch, is hashtag blame Chris. Whenever we're talking about the game and the new feature or whatever, it's blame Chris. So there you go.
There's always somebody that gets the blame laid on them. I don't think we have a blame hashtag for the show, though.
No, it's blame Chris now.
Yep, now it's Chris. Welcome to the SML podcast. We blame you.
It is all your fault. We have a question from Swizzlers in the chat. He's asking, since the game was originally a PC game, are you guys looking into a Windows 10 version, and will it be play anywhere with the Xbox version? Is that something on the table?
That's a great question. Thanks, Swizzlers. At the moment, we're focused on getting out on Xbox and PlayStation 4. The launch is only in US and Canada at the moment. These were both new platforms for Codename Entertainment. So to launch on two new platforms in a week was a mighty task, to say the least. But now that we're out and we're going to be going through our first round of updates this week, we'll be looking not only to expand territories, but also to see what other features of the platforms that we haven't been able to focus on because we were just focused on launch. And whether or not we go play anywhere is definitely one of the questions as we enter 2019.
Would that be the same way on PlayStation and a possible Vita version?
Potentially. Yeah. We're constantly looking for new avenues and new platforms to bring the game out on. We've seen amazing success on all the platforms we put it out on so far. So as long as it looks like the fan base will be there, we're gonna definitely consider those platforms.
So obviously this leads to me asking if a Switch version is in the works.
As an avid Switch player, I would love to get the game out on Switch, but we don't have anything to announce on a Switch version yet.
Yet. That's the key word.
But yeah, I do love the Switch. It's as you guys know, we haven't mentioned on the podcast, but we currently don't have any power in my house. So my daughter and I were spending the day with the Switch on the kitchen table playing Mario Kart. And it was
that is fantastic.
So much fun. Yeah. It's the next generation of candlelit board games at the table.
That works really well for the yeah. Switch being the modern day equivalent of a board game.
Yeah.
So what's going on up there with the weather? What kind of storms are you getting that's knocking out power for hours?
I don't know, man. It's been raining like crazy, and we had gusts up to like 90 kilometers an hour. It's been, it looks like someone massacred Christmas trees outside my place, because there's just branches and stuff everywhere. But it looks like it's starting to die down now.
I'm out in my car. It's raining, not snow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Although my daughter would probably wish it was snow, but yeah. I can't.
My kids are the same way. We are actually getting flooding right now. We're okay. We're on a hill, but every other poor sad sap that's in a valley around here is floating away. Yeesh. And like my first thought was, at least it's not snow. And then I was like, well, fuck. But it's not. It's Christmas time. It's the one time of year I like snow. Like this is Mother Nature's one shot, and she's fucking it.
We're getting rain here too, so I know the feeling. I was hoping we might have a white Christmas this year, but nope, just soggy.
Like after next Wednesday, if it snows, I'm pissed off. So she needs to really get her shit together.
Yeah, I've been in the Pacific Northwest for 7 years now, and I've just given the idea of a white Christmas that can just go away now. That's just never gonna happen.
I always feel like it should snow more up there.
You would think so, but no, it's more rain. I think a lot of it is because it's low-lying areas.
Yeah.
I think even in Seattle, I mean, you're basically on the water, and then as the area around it, you're only going up a little bit. But, you know, as you get into the Cascades, there's plenty of snow.
Yeah. Redneck land has plenty of snow. We get too much damn snow. We're supposed to be southern. It's like, oh, here's 4 foot of rain and another 6 foot of snow on top of it. Surprise.
Flooding and snow.
Dude, 1 year we had a tornado and then we had 3 foot of snow 2 days later.
Nice.
Like Mother Nature is a bipolar bitch around here. It's awful. You don't ever know what's going to happen.
So, Chris, are you excited for Christmas?
Yeah, I am. I am. It's my first Christmas up in Canada, and I just learned about Christmas crackers, and yeah, Christmas is going to be a lot of fun. We're really excited.
What are Christmas crackers? Christmas crackers?
So Christmas crackers are this thing that they have in Canada, and I think they have it in the UK as well, but you get them in a box of 12, and they're meant for social gatherings, so like a bunch of people around, and they have a central tube. It looks almost like a toilet paper tube, but it's got wrapping over it and everything, and then it has two tubes on either ends of it. And what you do is you hold two in your hands, one in each hand, and you cross hands with folks on the opposite side of you, and you both pull it, and it's like a wishbone So one of you is going to get the central tube, and the central tube has like a hat and a bunch of corny jokes and a little Cracker Jack like toy.
You mentioned all these tubes, and I thought it was drug related for a second.
No, no, no.
I'm just thinking that's far too social. We're not that crazy yet. My liking.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my introvert side is like cringing.
Well, you know, you can always just get a dozen of them yourself and just pop them. And they have you know, the pop guns. They have that kind of sound when you break them apart.
That's neat.
So that's how they get their cracker the name, I think. But yeah, it makes like a pop sound. So it's pretty fun.
You said crackers. I thought they were like saltine crackers or like Ritz crackers.
Oh, I wanted to eat like,
is it a snack?
Oh yeah, no. I took it in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
No, you're there's not nothing prepared edible for this. About this.
You crazy Canadians.
I know. That's the fun thing about being in a different country. It's like every new holiday is a new learning experience.
Canadians with your poutine and your ketchup chips.
Hey, those are two amazing things. Don't even joke.
Hey, poutine is amazing. We have a local hot dog place that does cheese and gravy fries. It's not cheese curd, so it's not strictly like poutine, but it's damn close enough, and oh my lord, is it delicious. And now I'm making myself hungry for it.
Yeah, no,
damn
poutine's
it.
Great. Ketchup fries, dill pickle fries, dill pickle chips. That's a thing up here.
Yeah, we have pickle chips around here every now and then. I'm not a pickle guy, okay. Though.
Oh, see, no, I just live off that stuff. I'm that guy at the Christmas party that goes over to the pickle and olive plate and eats all the pickles.
I want to be where there's a pickle plate. See, I love pickles, but anytime like anything vinegar comes into this house, everybody but me turns their nose up and, oh, that's gross. It smells so bad. Stop making the house stink, Mom. And I'm just like, why don't you people love me?
Swizzlers is mentioning Kraft dinner and ginger beef.
Yes,
what's ginger beef?
Actually, ginger beef, I don't know. I haven't learned that one yet. But Kraft Dinner is basically just the macaroni and cheese boxes. But instead of like Kraft macaroni and cheese, it's branded as Kraft Dinner up here.
And it's a whole, like, you're just supposed to eat it by itself?
I guess so.
You can make hot dogs with it, I guess.
Yeah, you can mix it with hot dogs. There's, you know, bacon.
Ginger beef is at Chinese Cantonese food. Is that Cantonese or should it be Cantonese? I don't know.
Maybe.
But I would eat that. not crafted. I can't. Look, I'm a Southern mom.
You've macaroni, got your own comfort food.
Macaroni's got to be done right. And that's Kraft ain't it.
Oh, don't give me that shit, Cole. Look, Kraft I'm macaroni poor. And cheese is good.
I'm poor, but I'm not poor enough that I can't have good macaroni and cheese.
What are you, a Velveeta shells and cheese person then?
Fuck no, that's Velveeta's not even cheese. That's just like yellow plastic disguised as cheese.
It's yellow gold.
Cosplaying.
Well, so we have to know now what is the right way to do macaroni and cheese.
I have a cookbook.
It's a secret.
Yeah, I have a cookbook called, I think it's Screen Doors and Sweet Tea or something like that. My sister gave it to me.
Oh, geez. That's the most Southern sounding cookbook name I've ever heard.
Look, it's not even my best cookbook. It's not even my best cookbook. My best cookbook is The White Trash Dinner Table. But the Screen Doors and Sweet Tea one, it has a recipe for macaroni and cheese in it that will just absolutely blow you over. It's amazing. But it's complicated. Like, it's full on. It's got mustard and garlic and black pepper and a crumb topping, and you bake it, and it's a big ordeal.
So is it yellow mustard or is it ground mustard?
Ground mustard.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And all right, I'm intrigued. I'm going to have to look it up now.
Yeah.
That sounds weird.
It's, trust me, I would never lead you astray as far as food goes. It's good. Now I'm going to end up making it for Christmas. Now that I've mentioned it, I'm going to be like, I have to go dig my damn cookbook out.
You have to send a Tupperware container up my way. I'll reheat it and have some leftovers.
And then you'll be like, shit, this is amazing. And you'll never want to eat Kraft again.
Like, why the fuck is there mustard in here and why is it good?
It's true, though.
Seriously, why the fuck is there mustard in macaroni and cheese?
It gives it just like this amazing little bite. It's so good.
I don't know. It's the garlic that's throwing me. Like, I'm a garlic.
I love fan, but... garlic and black pepper and just everywhere. I have yet to meet anything that you couldn't add garlic to and make it better.
I don't know. I tried adding garlic to eggs one morning, and my wife almost divorced me.
I love garlic in my eggs. I don't like eggs particularly, but it throws garlic on them, and I'm like, hey, I'm there. That's how it's like the sound of my accent, because I said bite.
I have a bite.
Yeah. As long as you don't put no oil in it, we're all right. It wouldn't be the end of the year if we just didn't spend the whole hour making fun of my accent.
Very true.
Is that part of the podcast retrospective?
Oh, my God.
Looking back at the year, fire, yeah. Oil.
Oh, you didn't even, you made fun of me. You said it wrong.
Oh, sorry. Oh.
Don't forget, it's Louisville.
Louisville. Appalachian.
Oh, if you say Appalachia, I'll throw an apple at you.
Wow, she had that one prepared.
Yeah, I hate when people say it wrong.
Well, that's only wrong to you. It's right to most of the rest of the world.
Most of the rest of the world don't know how to pronounce nothing.
Oh, my Lord. So, yeah, you're here to talk about a game.
I'm sorry. I pronounced that funny, too.
Idle champion.
Idle.
What kind of fun Christmas plans are there for Idle champions?
We actually do have some fun Christmas plans. So we were inspired a couple of weeks ago because we have a second podcast or a second live stream for our game, and Binwin Plays. So Scott Kurtz, the cartoonist who created the D&D character Binwin Bronzebottom for Acquisitions Incorporated, he plays through our games, and he has a puppet, an animatronic puppet that he has. Animatronic isn't the right word, but it's a digital puppet that he has for the live stream. And a couple of weeks ago, he had dressed him up like Santa, and it looked hilarious. So one of our artists had some free time, so she mocked up like a solstice version of Binwin, and we're going to release him to everyone who signed up to the newsletter over Christmas.
That's amazing.
So if you've signed up for the newsletter through whatever platform you're playing on, we'll either send you a code or redeem the new champion Binwin and his solstice Binwin costume.
I'm signed up, so I'm looking forward to that. I got my Hitch.
Nice. Yeah, Hitch is a must. Hitch is a must get. Poor Delina. Everyone was like, yeah, Delina. And then you get Hitch and you're like, oh, who was that? It's all right. I've got my eye on redesigning her come January.
What kind of plans do you have for her?
Oh, she needs more. She needs more party buffing. She needs more of a. She needs more of a role right now. I mean, it's too easy to throw Hitch in. We've got too many characters with high charisma. So it's too easy to throw Hitch into a formation and just lean on that rather than try out something new with Delina. So I want to lean on her because she's a sorcerer and she's a wild magic sorcerer. So I want to lean on her wild magicness a little bit more and make her a little swingy so that if you throw her under your formation, you might get something really cool out of it.
That's neat.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you didn't. I interrupted you.
I totally did.
I was saying everyone has their own niche and everyone has their own kind of feel. We've been working with a lot of streamers on their characters. So we have some of the characters from Dice Camera Action and some of the C-Team characters from Acquisitions Incorporated. And it's really interesting blending not only the lore they've created through years of playing this character, but also trying to find that that niche for the in-game representation of them. And it's one of the most fun parts about my job.
You were talking about people throwing different characters into their formations and stuff and being surprised by how they used ones over the other. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised at how involved some players could be at like min-maxing their stats to create certain formations and just break the game as much as possible?
Not really, because I find... Idle Champions is sort of at the crux of a bunch of different Venn diagrams of gaming. You know, you have the min-maxers that are just math heavy and just love to dive into the granular nature of it, and that they really love idle games. You have D&D players who live by their characters, so that so much so that if they don't min-max, the character might die, and oh my god, we can't do that. And so when you throw all of those different players together, I'm not surprised at all that that players are trying to find loopholes. I mean, that's what gamers do.
Swizzler's in chat is saying he wants a Joe character.
Nice.
So Cole, you're gonna have to scribble up an image of me as like a warrior or something. Cam the Mighty.
I don't think they'll let me give you a dick for a sword though.
We do have an alternate skin with a balloon sword. We do like to have some fun now and then, but no, I don't think we'll be able to dig through.
I don't think the ratings board would appreciate that.
No, not so much.
Fuck the ratings board. That Saints Row got away with it. They had the big purple dildo gun.
They're M-rated. I'm pretty sure Idle Champions is not M-rated.
Yeah,
that's no, violence.
We are firmly T for teen, and we like that rating.
So you'll have to make another balloon sword.
I can make it be a microphone for the podcast.
Oh my god, yes!
Oh, there you go.
A gigantic
microphone, a gigantic microphone broadsword or something. Just like, what's up, everyone? So yeah, everyone look forward to that special character coming never.
You never know, there's always April Fools, Joe.
Oh yeah, there we go. Oh my lord. We need to talk about Sweet Tea more, obviously.
You know, I'd be in on that.
Sweet, you know, for all my southernness, I don't even like sweet tea.
Really?
I don't like tea. I know. I'll run you into the ground over piss poor macaroni, but
sorry, that's what tea,
we don't have a good relationship.
That's what I do. I jump on podcasts and then I judge people for their choices.
It's okay. You could judge us and we'll blame you for stuff. It's a two-way street.
Perfect.
When you sound spinning like me, you're kind of get used to getting judged, so it's fine.
Oh my lord, I have no idea where we were. We were talking about characters.
Are we? Damn.
I want to know, why is it that there are 9 character slots for the formation but 12 characters that you could pick from? Why are you making me pick favorites?
Because we got to make you have those tough decisions, man.
Oh, I don't like tough decisions. I just want everyone fighting together.
Well, different campaigns have different numbers of slots and different formation makeup. So you've probably been playing through the Grand Tour, which has the I think it's the bowling pins formation. But when you get into it's Tomb of Annihilation that has bowling pins. But each of the events and each of the campaigns have their own unique formation breakdown. So it changes the way that you think about how you set things up. And so, yeah, we just love we love throwing variety in because it's fun. The more we can mess with the variables, the better. And having you make that tough decision means that you're not just letting the game play itself. You got to make those choices.
Who do you think is worth leaving to the side and who's worth having in the party?
Well, let's talk about the core 12 then. So you need to have Brunor, you need to have Celeste. Jarlaxle is really good when you're going to, when you're grinding for gold, but he's not so good when you're pushing for your walls. So when you're at the adventures that you need to get to like 200, 250, or there's a really hard boss, you definitely want to take Jarlaxle out and put someone else in. Naeli is a really great tank for the front, but so too is Arcan now. We just redesigned him about a month and a half ago. Jamila is a great DPS character for the core 12. And if you signed up for the newsletter and got Hitch, he's a must add, cause of his charisma buff. Let me think. Delina, you can put to the side for now till I redesign her. Tyrael has a lot of good functionality as both a buffer, because he has his Moonbeam ability, but also as a tank, if you want to take his Wild Shape specialization. So there's a couple of characters that can fill two different roles, depending on the specialization choice that you make.
So there's a lot of strategy required.
Yeah, and you know, it's that kind of strategy that is deceptively deep. Like, you can play the game and just throw characters together and level them up and not even care about your DPS number. You're going to have challenging points, but you can still play the game. But you can also just super dive into exactly this person is perfect for this spot in this formation. And you can just go down the rabbit hole. And that's part of what I love about the game is it's great no matter how you want to play the game. If you just want to, like, my daughter comes down and she's like, put all the girls in the formation, and, you know, and
guilty.
It's a completely viable formation. It's just a lot of fun. And that's what I keep coming back to with the game is it's just fun. Like, I think in the past year since the game's been out, I think my Steam hour ranking is at like 6,000 hours or something, because it's always running.
Wow.
And it's still fun. It's great.
How do you play that much? And like, well, obviously there's enough to do in the game. I think that was one of my complaints with the game is that there's just so much to the game that most people are never going to see half of it.
Maybe.
There's just so much content there.
But then there's also content for every type of gamer. There's contents for the min-maxers because there's really challenging variants. There's content for the narrative players because there's different variants that have different dialogue points or focus on affiliations. You know, there's a lot for everyone. And while most players aren't going to see everything, my hope is that we have enough for a wide swath of players so that everyone feels like there's something there for them.
You mentioned variants. What are some of your favorite? Actually, first off, explain what variants are in the game.
Sure. So take a step back. So when you play through an adventure, each adventure is made up of a 50 area campaign. In every 5 areas, there's a boss. And there's normally a small narrative through line for each of the 5 areas that also speak to a greater through line for the whole campaign. But every 50 areas, you'll repeat the adventure. So at area 51, you're going back through the content from area 1. It's just the bosses are, I mean, the monsters are more dangerous. They're doing more damage. They have more health. And so it's always that push to go further and further. Now, the variants take that same adventure, the same narrative structure, but add restrictions. Like, maybe there are wizards that are walking around with you and they take up 2 spots in the formation, or the bugbears in this adventure are super powered up and really hard to kill. And so they add little wrinkles into the existing adventure that make it a whole new adventure.
And what are some of your favorite variants?
Well, I wrote one. My favorite variant that I wrote is in the Grand Tour campaign. Eventually, spoilers, the champions get sent to Barovia, the land of Strahd von Zarevich and Castle Ravenloft. And it's basically like this really dark goth vampire demiplane. And during one of the adventures, the boss of the area, Strahd, he likes to toy with champions and get them to turn on their friends. And so there's a variant where the backgrounds shift. So you go between the storyline that you were going through, and it shifts to like a hellish landscape because you're in like this nightmare. And the whole area has narrative that's all about Strahd taunting the champions. So every four areas, he's taunting a new champion. And that was a lot of fun because I got to jump into the roles of a bunch of different champions and say, you know, what are the buttons that Strahd would press? What would they get upset about? What would he try to get them to do to turn on their friends? And so it was really interesting for me. And from a design standpoint, we don't normally do variant dialogue. Normally the dialogue in the variant is the same dialogue from the original adventure. Mm-hmm. And so to spend time and work on a new set of dialogue for the variant was really fulfilling. And so that was, that's definitely one of my favorite variants. But there's other ones too that, let me think. It's been a year of content. Let's see.
Are there any that are particularly evil?
Yes. so Durable Deep is one that it reminds me that is evil, but for the life of me, I can't remember what the restrictions are because I couldn't defeat it a while ago and it's still on my to-do list.
Oh, God.
So Durable Deep, which will be coming in your adventure line shortly, I think it's a variant of like the 8th or the 9th adventure. Is a particularly tough one. And more recently, we had the champions face off against Acerarak. He's a demi-lich. And for one of the variants, we have you unlocking a new champion. And that's we'll unlock champions in various ways. And one of the ways are through variant play. And we'll throw a really challenging variant at the players. But the benefit is not just a chest or gems. You'll unlock a whole new champion. And up until recently, this variant was really, 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 really hard. And that was the Save Azaka variant, where you had to go through and you lost an entire slot in your formation because you're carting this champion's dead body because she'd saved the day and kind of rescued you guys. So you're bringing her with you so that you can defeat the monster and then resurrect her. And that was a really challenging one.
Why is it was really challenging up until recently? What changed?
So there were two things that changed. So as we continue to progress the end game campaigns and push players further and further, we increase the soft cap or the levels for the champions. So right now you can get Brunor up to like level 1200. And if you max everyone out at the moment, and we know sort of like an average gear level sort of way where you should get to, If we have a variant that is a little bit further than that, it's really challenging for a while. And then as we continue to push adventures further and further past that, eventually we need to give the champions more levels so that they can get further themselves. We just recently did a soft cap increase that allows players to get a little bit further. But also we did a major rebalance with all of our tanks and our healers that made that particular variant a little bit easier. Because one of the really challenging parts was Acerarak had chain lightning, and he would just shoot lightning through the entire party and your healers wouldn't be able to keep up. But with tanking and healing update, they were able to keep up a little bit better.
Gotcha. What is the highest level that you've seen someone get in the game?
So on the PC version, I want to say I've heard folks that can get up to 400.
Damn.
I know that I can get up to 320. But I know that there are other players that are even more dedicated than I, and I've heard that they've gotten up to 400 and beyond.
Damn, I was excited when I got the achievement for 150.
That's a good achievement though. Like you're breaking out of the first couple of playthroughs, you're really starting to stretch your legs and get people geared up, and that's a big thing too, is gear level matters, and having champions that have really strong gear can make the difference in terms of pushing 20 or 30 more levels.
And how can people get more gear in the game?
So you can get every five levels, you'll face a boss, and there's a certain percent chance that the boss will drop a silver chest. But then at the end of every adventure, you'll also collect gems. You can then take the gems and buy silver chests, which have one to three, or have three cards, one of which is a gear card. Or you can buy gold chests. The gold chests are more expensive, gem-wise, but they have more. They have five cards, and at least two of them are gear pieces.
Gotcha.
So you want to get silver and gold chests to gear up champions.
And what other ways can people get gold chests in the game?
You can purchase gold chests with hard currency or with cash. You can get gold chests through DLC packs. So we have starter packs for all of, or most of the base champions that will gear them up in full rares and one golden epic. So you can purchase that and just gear them up right away. And then in addition to the free gear levels, we also have gold chests in those packs as well.
So you could just load people up with these packs.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I thought the request was coming in for a second.
What kind of request? Oh, just hook me up with everything?
Yeah.
The one thing that I want in the game is I want more, the option to pay, like, I will pay cash to buy more speed potions. Like, I love those speed potions that speed everything up for like 2%, two times the speed until the end of the adventure. Those are my favorite potions in the game. I want to just buy those.
Those are fairly recent additions too. We added those back in September, I believe. But they've been super popular, and I get excited when I get speed potions in a chest as well. Those are great grabs.
I think I only have like one of the good ones left, and I'm eyeing up all the packages. The one familiar comes with six of them, and I'm trying to think, do I have the $15 to do this? Probably going to have to wait until after Christmas. I could use an extra familiar anyway. I'm waiting to get to six familiars so that I can just automatically get all the distractions taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are accurately named, they distract me from doing anything else, because I'll throw the game on and I have my TV off to the side of my desk, and I'll just throw the game on and think I'll let it run in the background while I work on some stuff for the show. I got to do some editing or reply to emails, whatever else, and I'll just be distracted by, oh god, a crow's coming, I got to get the crow. Oh, there's a rat, I got to get the rat.
Well, it's good to get those too, because they'll have a higher amount of gold than the regular monsters for that level. So it's a nice way to get quick levels.
Plus, I'm glad you guys I'm not the only one that gets distracted by those, though.
That's why they're called distractions, right?
You gotta get every one of them, or you just feel like you fucked up.
Well, just wait, because we've been revisiting our events. So every 3 weeks, we have a new event in the game. And the event is a 10-day window, and you guys haven't actually had a chance to experience it yet, because our first event is going to be Winter Shield, which will come out the day after Christmas. But the events have a new unique adventure with new variants that you go through, but they're also seasonally based. So we have like a Halloween themed event, we've got a Christmas themed event. And as we go back through those events for year two, we've been revisiting them and saying, can we fix the backgrounds here? Can we add new distractions? So we've got new distractions for the snowy events. We've got the rat that runs by. We've got a rat that's like encased in a snowball, and we've got a snowman that kind of waves until you hit him, and then he just disintegrates. It's super awesome. So if you thought you were distracted before, just wait.
No.
you guys are evil with the distractions. I love the fact that there's an achievement for getting 1,000 crows, not just in 1,000 distractions in general. They've got to be the crows, those goddamn crows. They haunt my nightmares.
Now I kind of wish this was on video and I could just have a crow that popped up behind my head.
Oh well, next time.
You said that and my instinct was pull the trigger and press the face button. Like, I immediately went to do the motion and I'm not even holding the controller.
Just the itchy trigger finger starts going.
Yeah, you're like, distracting. Pull the trigger. Never mind. Pull the trigger. I'm not even doing a thing. I'm just sitting here.
And am I right in that the faster moving distractions have even more gold than the slower ones?
Yes, they do.
Okay. I kind of figured that was the case, but I wasn't positive. I figured I would ask.
Yeah, you gotta be real quick for that one.
Especially when it's running at double speed.
Yeah, that's true. You gotta just have that right trigger held down.
And just mash face buttons.
One of these will work, I swear.
Oh, man. I feel like I've been asking so many questions. Cole, do you have any?
No, I asked a couple. I asked that one good one, too. Deal with it. I asked questions. I was a functional member of the show. I'm going to take a nap now.
By take a nap, do you mean you're going to play more Idol Champions?
I cannot promise that is not what I mean.
Oh, Lord. So, Chris, when you're not working on Idol Champions, what games are you enjoying right now?
That's a great question. I'm in the middle of playing The Messenger on Switch and having a ton of fun playing that. What else? I just played through Spider-Man on PS4, and that was amazing.
I've heard so much good about that game, and I haven't played it yet.
Oh, it's totally worth it. It's worth every penny. Just the getting to swing through the city, and it's just so effortless and so fun. Like, I could swing through that city all day long. It's just so much fun. And they just did such a great job with the combat. It feels like you know how revolutionary Arkham City and the other Arkham games were in terms of combat? Mm-hmm. Like, they took that and they turned it up even more. And it's just the unlocks that you can get and the storyline is just wonderful. Like, they hit this game out of the park. It's so much fun. If you're a Spider-Man fan, you have to play this game.
I've been neglecting my PS4. I feel kind of bad.
Well, the good thing is you've got a 2-week break coming up.
Very true. Then again, I'll be at MagFest for half of that break, so.
Well, you can pack it in your bag. It's okay.
Keep it in the hotel room. Instead of going to the show floor and watching panels or whatever else, I'll just sit in my room and play God of War finally. It's not a bad idea now that I think about it.
Fly across the country for some you time.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man. I know we've been chatting for a good while now. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about the game that we didn't bring up?
No, I think we covered everything. Like, it's out now on PlayStation and Xbox. If you're interested in the game, download it and check it out. Hopefully you won't regret it. Like, I think everyone that plays it has fun with it, and I'm really proud of it. Make sure folks sign up for the newsletter so that they can unlock Binwin and get the Solstice Binwin skin. And yeah, come back. We'll keep bringing updates for as long as we've got players that want to play.
And it's free, so why wouldn't you download it?
It's free to play. It's free to play, it's and free. It's perfect for Netflix breaks.
It's fucking free. Just play it.
Just come into our world and have fun with us, because we're having a lot of fun.
Oh my God, No Time for Games just dropped 1,250 biddies.
No Time has lost his goddamn mind.
Pretty much. I got to give shout outs to people who drop biddies. That's what I do on the show.
That might be a new record.
Yes, Swizzler's dropping bits. That's what Swizzlers is waiting for, dropping bits.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Chris, it has been a pleasure having you on, chatting about the game. How can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing and what Codename is doing?
You can follow us at Idol Champions on Twitter or Idol Champions on Facebook. I'm at Game Guru Chris on Twitter. Feel free to jump in and chat. And then if you, like I said, if you want to follow the game, sign up for the newsletter. We send a newsletter out every week and it comes with a free chest, and we'll have other freebies like the free Binwin coming up that, you'll be able to grab through the newsletter.
Awesome. So lots of ways people could keep in touch with you. Lots of ways to keep the game going and keep it fun and interesting. I guess that's about it. It's been great having you on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to come back in a couple of months when you guys are, you know, way deep in multiple variants and you want to chat some more.
Balls deep in variants.
You said it, not me.
Someone had to say it. Well, Chris, thank you again for coming on. We will let you go so you can enjoy the rest of your night with no power.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Don't party too hard in the dark.
We'll play some Mario Kart and have fun.
Sounds good. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
No, thank you guys so much for having us, having me. Thank you for reaching out about the interview, and wish you guys all the best and a happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well. Have yourself a wonderful night.
Cheers.
Take care. All right. Good stuff.
We did it.
We did it. We won.
Is that how we win? Are we winners? We actually won something.
We won.
I feel like you should like give out a code if we have any. Do we have any?
Codes? Yeah. Let's see. What do I have here?
Let's see if we can give somebody something.
Let's do this one, and we'll do it the fun way on screen. So the people who are listening to the MP3 of this have no idea what the fuck we're doing.
Sorry, but it's Christmas, and I'm in a giving mood, and I don't actually get the codes. So I've got to poke Joe and tell him to give shit away.
Well, if someone is quick on the draw, there is a code for Super Pixel Racers on the screen right now. So hurry up and hop on that and do your thing, people. But we got more show to take care of. We got news, we got reviews, we got a whole bunch of other stuff that we got to do. And by a whole bunch of other stuff, I mean news and reviews.
Yes.
Yes. So stupid. All right, let's see. What kind of news do we have this week? You got anything?
No.
Nothing at all? You don't have anything?
No, I really don't.
You didn't see Games with Gold for January were already announced?
Oh, I did see that earlier. I forgot about that already.
There's shit.
There is shit, yeah.
Let's see.
There was something the other day, too, that I... No, look, I saw your face. there was something the other day, and I don't remember what it was now. Shit! Okay, go ahead. Games with Gold.
Games with Gold for January were announced nice and early. I'm so happy they did it before we went on break.
Yeah.
But Xbox One... Awesome lineup for Xbox One. The entire month of January is Celeste.
I'm pretty excited about that because when Celeste come through, I was like, oh, I don't want to take it for review because I don't think I could do it justice because I was afraid it would be too hard on my arthritis. And I missed out on it completely. And now I don't have to miss out on it. I can play it at my leisure. And not have to worry about whether or not I'm going to fuck up a review for it.
What, like you fucked up a review for tonight?
It happens. Look, I can't be perfect all the time, or people would think I wasn't real.
But the other game for Xbox One from January 16th through February 15th is World Rally Championship 6, which is a pretty solid racer.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Xbox 360, it's kind of mixed. For January 1st through the 15th is Lara Croft in The Guardian of Light. And if that sounds familiar, it's because we've gotten our first repeat.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, it is a repeat from, I believe, January 2013 or 2014. So we are getting our first repeat.
Games that long?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, that's a good run of not repeating.
Yeah, I can understand. Some people are annoyed. Like, I can understand being annoyed if you've been a member for that long and you've gotten the game for free already. But still, it's been 5 years. Think of all the people who got a console in those 5 years.
The last 5 years.
That haven't played it. So, yeah. Rock on. I don't have a big problem with it. January 16th through the 31st is Far Cry 2, which is pretty solid.
I don't have that. I actually haven't played any Far Cry except for I watched David play a little bit of Far Cry Primal. So I'm not disappointed in that. Like, I could see myself going back and checking it out.
I'm pretty sure Far Cry 2 is a lot different than 3 and on.
Probably, but I'm still okay with that because I still don't know jack shit about Far Cry other than Far Cry Primal. So
that works.
So surprise me. I've got no expectations.
There were 3 new Game Pass editions this week. So that's pretty cool.
This was a pretty heavy week for Game Pass.
Yeah, we finally got Ori and the Blind Forest Definitive Edition, which is awesome. Shadow Warrior 2, and then a special bonus, Life is Strange.
Surprise! I don't know who hasn't played Life is Strange yet, but if there is anybody out there, congratulations! I absolutely love Life is Strange. I know a lot of people were like, oh, it's cringy dialogue, or it's this, or I wouldn't have done that. I don't care. I loved Life is Strange. I just enjoyed it, and I'm glad more people are going to get to enjoy it.
Indeed. So yeah, that is the Game Pass editions, Games with Gold. What other news? Nintendo has confirmed that the NES and SNES Classic are going out of production once again. And once the holiday season stock sells out, they will not be restocked. So if you have been contemplating picking one up, now is the time to do it because they won't be coming back.
Those bastards really just like to create an atmosphere of inaccessibility when it comes to picking up their consoles. That's just always been Nintendo's thing.
They have been easily available for months now. Yeah. So
I'm surprised they've been available as long as they are, but basically it's like, okay, well, we made it available for a little while and now we got to queue a rush of people who want one that didn't get one and have no choice but to get it now.
Yeah. Well, at least they're giving people a heads up and they're like, hey, listen, once the stock's gone, this is all that we did.
Sorry, you made that an easy joke. I had to do it.
Oh, you.
I couldn't help myself.
Some other Nintendo news is that the Switch has sold more than 8.7 million units to date, making it the fastest selling video game console of the generation in the US, which means in the time frame that it has been out, it has sold more than the PS4.
What?
Yes, it is selling faster than the PS4 sold.
Wow.
Yeah.
Everybody hollers that the PS4 was like the king of the generation.
Yup.
And the Switch just kind of shit on it?
In the same time frame, same amount of time that the Switch has been out compared to the PS4, in the US at least, the Switch has sold more than the PS4. And obviously the Xbox One.
Huh.
Yep. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. I'm surprised and impressed. Because I definitely would not have expected that.
Yeah, some other impressive sales figures is Breath of the Wild has sold over 4 million units. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe has sold over 5 million units. Mario Odyssey over 4.7. Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee combined over 2 million units. Super Mario Party 1.4 million. And Super Smash Bros. Ultimate in just 11 days sold over 3 million copies.
Wow.
In 11 days.
People were pretty hardcore begging for that. So that's... I don't think I'm surprised by the number, but it's still an alarming number.
Yeah.
Like, it's impressive, it's easy to see where the fanfare for that was. So I that makes sense. Still a crazy fucking number.
Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. Hmm. But last bit of news I have is, I'm not sure if you heard about this, but Kingdom Hearts 3 leaked out into the wild over a month and a half before its release.
Yeah, I did hear about this.
Where apparently some guy who worked probably at a shipping facility or somewhere along the production line stole like 30 copies of the game and he was selling them on Facebook.
Wow.
How crazy is that?
Wow.
A month and a half before the game releases.
That guy's going to lose his job.
I think he's going to lose a lot more than his job.
Yeah.
He's probably going to lose his freedom for a good while as well.
Yikes.
Yeah. It just makes you wonder if the game is ready and, you know,
what's finished, the hold up?
Why not just release it early?
Yeah. I don't know. All I was aware of it was, people are saying, oh, there are leaks, there are spoilers, tread carefully.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize that all that had happened.
Yeah.
So at that point, yeah, I don't understand why they're not just letting it go.
That's how the leaks happened.
I can't imagine why they're just like, okay, well, we might as well sit on it.
Yeah, they're still just going to sit until the end of January before it releases. I think if they were smart, they would just release it like Christmas Day, be like, guess what, fuckers? It's in stores.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. It's available tomorrow.
Weird. That's... I don't know what I would do either, though, man. You can't... It's impossible to know their timeline. Like, you always hear about crunch time and what's going on those last few weeks before a game actually releases. It's kind of like the worst of it.
Yeah.
you know, bug squashes and all that going on right before it's supposed to hit the door. So I don't know.
Yeah, well. Well, that's all the news I got. Anything on your end?
I was actually just looking at episode, is it three? The third episode of The Walking Dead, the final season, is supposed to release on January 15th.
Oh, that's cool.
Skybound Games has been working on it. But I was actually trying to understand where I was reading this at. It's not very clear, but Variety states that it will be launching on Epic Games Store. And if you purchased it on a different PC platform, you'll still receive it. But from what I'm understanding, it won't be available for purchase elsewhere individually. It's only if you've already bought it somewhere else, then you can get it.
That is weird.
That's why I keep rereading this, and I'm like, this sounds so wrong, but with the way that shit's been rolling out with the Epic Games Store, it sounds about right. So I'm not entirely sure if I'm wrong on that, but it does seem like if you bought it on, I'm assuming Steam or Windows 10, if you already own it, you'll get it. But otherwise, if you want to buy it, you have to get it from Epic Games.
Anyway, we got reviews we got to take care of. A lot of games to talk about. Are you ready for these?
I'm ready.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Are you really ready?
No.
No. Not like we're stapling this show together from multiple days worth of recordings the way it is.
That would never be a thing that we would do. We sit here the whole 4 hours in one whack.
Exactly. This was one solid, complete recording. This is not a Friday recording that was edited into a Thursday recording.
My butt hurts from sitting in this chair so long.
The best part is we could refer to stuff that happened later in the episode because we already recorded it.
Yeah!
I don't know what we would refer to, but...
I don't know. I kind of assumed this would be tacked on to the end. Like, oh, by the way, look at what this bitch did.
No, we're starting off the reviews like this.
Are we starting off like this?
Yeah.
So then people are going to be so confused when they hear me later talking about how I fucked up and forgot to play a game for review.
Actually, I think that was earlier in the show.
Was it earlier? I don't even know anymore.
Me neither. Me neither. Between the multiple recordings and the audio issues I was having, I don't know how this is going to sound. But if anyone's listening and thinks it sounds ridiculous, it does.
That's what you get for listening to us. Oh, what tangled webs we weave.
We are professionals.
Yes. We've been doing this. Lord, even I've been doing this for like, a year and a half, 2 years now? You'd think I'd have my shit together. No. I don't have my shit together.
There's no excuse for me at this point.
There really is not.
I don't know. My give a shit's gone. It's one of our last episodes of the year, so.
You know what I'm a little sad we didn't do?
Huh.
We didn't do, like, our big game of the year and opinions on best games and stuff like that. We didn't. Not that anybody gives a fuck what we think about them, but.
Okay, what's your game of the year then?
Fuck, now I don't know. But I was just thinking I was sad that we didn't do it.
I can't keep track of what the game of the year is that I reviewed because we've covered way too many goddamn games.
I have that problem, too. Like, I forget when things come out. You could ask me what my game of the year is, and I'm going to say Silence, even though it came out 2 years ago, because I just don't remember when shit comes out anymore. Night in the Woods was last year, wasn't it? Still my game of the year. Deal with it.
Forza Horizon 4. There. Game of the year. Forza Horizon 4.
I haven't played enough of 4. I need to play more of it. I hit level 20 so that I could unlock online to play with Studa, and then we've been playing literally everything else still. So we haven't even had time to play Forza yet.
So proud of you.
I know. Maybe these next couple weeks while I'm off, because I have no reviews. Or I'll be forgetting a review. That's beside the point.
Always good.
Yeah. Anyway, the reviews we're supposed to be doing now.
Yeah, reviews. First game we're talking about tonight is called Atari Flashback Classics Volume 3. developed by Code Mystics, published by Atari, released December 13th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Atari Flashbacks Classics Volume 3 brings more classic arcade, Atari 2600, and Atari 5200 games to the latest generation of consoles, and for the first time, vintage hits from M Network. Kick, fight, dunk, race, and blast your way through 50 timeless games from Atari's vast library of hits. Cole, tell us about it.
So this includes a combination of arcade games, like the old actual arcade cabinets, the Atari 2600, and Atari 5200. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first time any of the 5200 games have been released. There's, like I said, there's 50 of them overall, and it's a good, healthy collection of games, but this is definitely for the more retro hardcore enthusiast.
This is for the Joe of your life.
But you know what's funny, Joe? I'm higher on the leaderboards than you.
Are you?
Yeah. I'm so good. There was one game where you had me, and I went back and I beat it this morning, so that nice. I was ahead of you. As far as the retro aspect of it goes, some of the games can be incredibly difficult to understand. Adventure 2 literally just has you being a square in a maze. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, okay, I was playing it and number one comes in here and she's just staring at me. She's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm on an adventure. And she goes, no, you're a box. And it took some getting used to adjust to some of these. But thankfully, before you start these games, you can actually go in and make a few adjustments to them to help modernize them a little bit for you. You can remove the scan lines. You can adjust some of the flicker on some of the games. It just makes it a little more visually tolerable because some of them are harsh just to look at.
These are old school Atari games. These are not the prettiest looking things.
I don't know how we did this as kids. I really don't. Like, maybe this is why I'm in glasses now. Some of them are hard. It's not, you know, a negative really. It's just a comment on the state of games and how far we've come more than anything.
Oh yeah.
It was definitely amusing to go back through them and show them to the kids and be like, this is what I played. And just number one was like, no. it probably explains a lot about me to her to watch me play that shit now. but it's really a lot of fun to go back and visit these games. Some of these are even previously unreleased. I think Maze Invaders had never been released before at all.
Wow.
And so now it was, I'm pretty sure that was the one I read was unreleased. And now it was included in this bundle. So that's pretty neat that there's, even after all this time, there's still just unreleased Atari games floating around out there. And now you can play them for the first time ever. There is a multiplayer aspect. You can actually, on some of the games, you can search for a session. I never found any, though. I don't know if people aren't realizing that you can play multiplayer. I don't know how it's going to work. It seemed to be most of the sport games that had a multiplayer side, but it would just come up and say session not available.
Yeah, so I see the option to host one, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't like buy this with the intent of playing an online multiplayer.
Yeah, unless you have a friend who also has it and you're setting up a play date.
Right.
I think Atari Classics being a niche game to begin with then 50 separate games in there and only some of them have the multiplayer aspect.
Yeah.
Finding a random game online on any of these is going to be a tough sell.
This would be one of those instances where it would be good. I assume there probably already is a Discord server for these games. Somebody somewhere has done it. You'd probably just want to find a Discord server and set up somebody to play with as opposed to just trying to find a game.
Yeah.
But I think it's incredible that they even included that as an option when you think about these games and how old they are. And it's especially important because some of the games can only be played two player. And I loaded it up, but it was like, plug in a controller for player two. And I was like, nope, not today. I've had enough of my kids for the last 3 days already, and I've got 2 weeks to go. Let's not kill anybody. winter break is rough.
You're going to enjoy your time off, aren't you?
Why do you think I wait till everybody's in bed and then I play until like 4 a.m? That way I could sleep all morning. And I miss the crummy part of the day. after everybody's already awake, they're far more tolerable. But as far as the game, I just think it was really well done. There are manuals. I know I mentioned that some of them could be hard to understand. There are manual scans for the console games, not the arcade ones, because fuck you. But but the console ones do have scans. And so you can actually flip through and like read about the games, but it doesn't always help. Most of them tend to be pretty straightforward in their porting and how you play it. Just smash X or smash Y or A, because there wasn't a whole lot of buttons to choose from back then.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, though, are a little odd. Did you play Holy Moly?
Yes.
Holy Moly is whack-a-mole, okay?
Yep.
Which is fine. But rather than, like, mapping the holes where the mole's going to come out of to any of your buttons or anything like that, there's, like, a calculator-looking grid on the left-hand side. And you have to move your cursor to light up the right key that corresponds with the hole the mole is popping out of. It's so convoluted. It's so much more difficult than it needs to be.
Well, the game was originally played with that number pad because that's how the controller was.
Man, on a controller, it is just not a good thing.
I didn't have problems with that because it's just hold the direction where the hole is and hit the A button.
Yeah, but when you're first trying to figure it out, you're like, forget it. It can be really hard, though, to like keep up with where your cursor is over here when you're trying to watch something pop up quickly over on the right, you know? Like, you're trying to keep the left and the right, keep your eye on both of them.
I didn't even look at the number pad.
Joe, how did you know where your cursor was?
Because when you let go, it recenters.
Why would you let go?
For the center one?
I made it far more complicated on myself, didn't I?
You did. Yes.
It was
so
hard. It was. Like, I did well, and I think I beat you, but it was hard.
Possibly.
Like, there's an achievement for that one, for getting to level 10, and I cried at 3. I'm like, I'm done. Next. achievement-wise, I think this would be a fairly easy completion. It's not going to be like an hour completion kind of thing. You have to play all 50 games at least once. And somehow, I don't know which one I've skipped, but I'm at 94%.
Oh, boy.
So I get to go play them all again until I figure out which one's not triggering. I'm pretty sure I've played them all, but the achievement says no. There's only 20 achievements, which is kind of funny given that there's 50 games. So it's this kind of random, like, Frog and Flies, I think it is, has one for catching 100, scoring at least 100. And then the Fire Truck game has one for getting extended play. Those are the ones that are more difficult, where you have to actually do well in the game other than just, like, random shit that you can pull off magically.
Yeah.
and those are the ones that are like, okay, this is tough because the Fire Truck game is difficult to control.
Yeah, just a little.
Those racing games, period, are hard to control. And I love the fact that it's like there's a speedometer and it'll say you're going 90 and it's the same speed you were going when you were going 10. Nothing changes. You just go and it just like the little speedometer is just, it's for looks. But I did have a lot of fun with it anyway.
Well, then $20 on Atari Flashback Classics Volume 3. What do you think of it?
That's less than 50 cents a game. Buy it.
Makes sense. Yeah. I agree. I love these retro compilations. I'm happy that we got a third one. And I look forward to a possible fourth in the future.
It's kind of basically like your most favorite thing ever, because A, it's a game compilation, and B, it's retro games.
So it's win-win for me.
Yeah. But the downside is I did better than you on the leaderboards.
You did. I gotta play it more. I didn't have too much time with it. Lunch came, and I slept in late today, so.
Tear bed. Next.
I'm just full of excuses. Next game to talk about is called As Divine Hearts 2, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released December 21st on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99, and is a play anywhere game. Picking up 2 years after the events of the first adventure, Zack and friends find themselves off on another quest, but this time to save the parallel world of Archelio. I hope I said that right. Which is on the verge of being frozen in ice. Dark Mika covered this one, sent in her review. This is what she's got to say. As Divine Hearts 2 is an old-school turn-based JRPG. You play as Zack and his crew once more, though you've switched out one of your older party members, the High Priestess, for a new twisted woman, the Shadow Deity, named by Zack as Nadia. After beating the shit out of her in the first game, the two deities got back together on friendly-ish terms and started ruling again, kinda. Felix, the Light Deity, is a pompous twat, and Nadia... Mm-hmm. As well, both really smart and focused, but easy to manipulate, especially by Felix. Because of that, Nadia ends up being really cool and cringeworthy on a regular basis. Anyways, the team is now trying to save another world, to which I honestly forget the name because because it's confusing.
Wow.
I honestly forgot the name from a prophet type who holds massive magical properties, kind of like maybe the creation deity or something, maybe. Also, Felix is still going around as a cat. Why? Honestly, I have no idea. She can have a proper human body, but she just chooses to be a cat because reasons. She's not particularly bright. You'd think the deities that run this set of worlds would be, you know, smart, but yeah, not this time. The game stated that it had new stuff in the combat and leveling, but I honestly added one new type of skill, and beyond that, I think it changed the symbols of some of the magic type, but that's it, really. So the combat is the same old, same old. Now you get a new type of attack that takes part of the trust gauge instead of the full thing. Granted, you still have the full trust gauge attacks, too. Just gives you access to some of the higher damage attacks while your trust gauge isn't maxed, so they're moderately useful at best and not really a game changer. They also changed the visual look to the older to the attack order line. They made it sleeker and more stylized. I prefer the old one as it was easier for me to see, but that's just a personal opinion. The overall map, well, you start off in your world and then go to another one. Both maps are nearly identical in item placement, it felt like. The placement of Ares on the map in the world seemed to be different from the first game, which screwed me up as a bit as I'm still fooling around in the first one, so suddenly things aren't where they should be. I still don't like the emptiness of the map, and I don't care if that's how they are, Joe. I still just don't like it. And that's for farming mobs reasoning isn't worthwhile, as the mobs show up in every dungeon and in the map around said dungeon. I'd rather more crap on the map, or the map just be overall smaller and only deal with enemies in dungeons. Being like that would save me a lot of cursing as I try to get back to a village to go to an inn and heal and die numerous times trying to get there by mobs in the map. Listen, Dark Mika. That's how old school JRPGs are. That's how they are.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want out of it. Random battles is so much of the point of old school JRPGs. That's just what you do in the games. I don't know.
I mean, I always just kind of expect it.
Oh, Dark Mika.
You're strolling around and ta-da, you get ambushed and they fuck your face off.
Yeah. Anyway, you still get to effectively indefinitely level up. Granted, there, like all the other games, isn't much of a reason to do it other than simply for dick measuring contests with the post-game dungeons. The Rubik's Cube Tetris piece stat thing is back. I still find that really neat. Oh, for those that don't know, you place Tetris blocks on a single side of a Rubik's Cube, and the blocks give you added stats and abilities for your character. Each character has their own, and it's just a cute little odd mechanic that takes place of accessories. The Tetris pieces still come from enemies, and their drop rate is tied to the game's difficulty. I still don't like that aspect, but that's just the game's mechanic, so it's something you gotta live with. The story of the previous one was fairly bland till you got well into it, then it picked up, but this one, it's not really as good. The focus seems to be on cheesy jokes and more of on the harem Zack has unknowingly created for himself, and all the girls trying to get him for themselves while he sits there too stupid to understand any of them like him. The story beyond that isn't much of a focus, sadly, but again, these were mobile games, so they're made to be played in short chunks, so that's fine. As a port, you just gotta accept it. If it was made from scratch for this, I'd be upset about it, but it wasn't, so that's fine. The price is $15 on Xbox, and honestly, I'd say this might be a pass unless you really like the Kemco games. It has some cheesy humor, but the story just isn't there like in the first game. And if you have the first game, you already have most of the gameplay that this one has. Well, guess what, Dark Mika? I bought it anyway. I just, you have gripes with how old school JRPGs are, and that's just how they are.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a thing.
In old school Final Fantasy games, when a new one came out, it was a new story and mechanics that were basically the same as the previous one with some minor changes. And it sounds like that's what this is. It's more of the same, and if you enjoyed it, you enjoy it. And if you didn't, it's probably not going to change your mind.
Yeah. But when I think of a sequel, that's what I expect. It's the same mechanics, but a new story. And I find it odd when people are like, it didn't do this, it's not different enough. And I'm like, what did you want it to be a whole new genre?
Yeah.
It's a common argument when a sequel comes out that, you know, either it's love it or hate it. And usually the hate it crowd is, it's the same thing, but a different story. And you're like, that's the point of a sequel.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like if you enjoyed the first As Divine Hearts, it's worth picking this one up.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed the first As Divine Heart, so I picked it up, and I am not regretting my purchase.
Nice.
So, all right, next game to talk about is called Kingmaker: Rise to the Throne, developed by Cordelia Games, published by Artifacts Mundi, released December 14th on Xbox One and PS4, December 20th on the Switch for $14.99. Two royal knights, Edmund and Randall Ulmer, are tricked into a conspiracy against the crown. Pursued by the royal guard and ruthless conspirators, the brothers embark on a dangerous journey that will uncover the kingdom's shameful secrets, restore the honor of the Ulmer family, and change their fate forever. Paul, tell us about it.
It seems really fitting for me to end the year with an Artifacts Mundi game. Some things never change. There are some changes with this one, though. This is the second Artifacts Mundi game that we've seen developed by a secondhand studio. I say secondhand, like it sounds like it's bad, but it's not what I mean. but it's a second studio. It's not Artifacts Mundi having developed it. They've published it. It has that classic Artifacts Mundi look and feel to it. The art style is fantastic. The animation's a little on the chunky side, especially when it comes to, mouths and movement during speech. But it's not as high quality as some of the other ones we've seen straight out of Artifacts Mundi. It's got that more stop motion feel with the animation. Whereas more recent Artifacts Mundi games have had actual fluid movement for the character models. This one's more like somebody took a flip book, if that makes sense. This is also the second one to come out recently, as Mint started off with, from another studio who has shrugged off the heroin aspect. It sounds like I'm saying the drug. but most Artifacts Mundi games up until this point have had a female lead. And the last two that we have seen have not. Noir Chronicles had a male PI. And in this one, you play as one of the Ulmer brothers. Who have been framed for treason and murder of the king in their kingdom. They were part of the king's guard and they were caught in a trap and they have been framed for the king's murder. They didn't actually do it. So now it's up to you to help them solve their way through the kingdom via hidden objects and try to uncover who the rightful king is and see that they take their place on the throne. It's a really interesting story. I thought they did it really well. There were a couple of moments where it was kind of disjointed, and I was just like, there's a character that pops up toward the end who is apparently the supreme evil for this one, and you're just like, who are you? Where'd you come from? There wasn't enough foreshadowing or anything to let you know that that was going to be the road it was going to take. And so it kind of felt like it was kind of pigeonholed in there. There was an interesting twist in the fight mechanic. When we've had combat in Artifex Mundi games before, what they've used is like you'd have two orbs with a variety of runes in them, and you would have to find, in your orb, you would have to find the pairs of runes that did not match what was in the enemy's orb. That way, if you had matches, basically they could block you. And if you didn't have a match, then it wouldn't be blockable. Instead of doing that this time for the combat sequences that you'll run into, they have these, intricate designs that will kind of pop up. They don't start off intricate, but they get some pretty unruly designs by the end of the game. And if you've ever seen where you have to trace over something without crossing the lines, so you have to go from node to node to trace over the pattern without crossing any of the lines twice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what they use for the combat sequences. And I mean, some of these get elaborate with 20 and 30 points on them that you have to get through without crossing the lines. I thought it was neat. It was a really good way to kind of put a puzzle twist on combat without having actual combat.
Yeah.
For this one, they've dropped the mini game aspect to the hidden object puzzles. That seems pretty standard fare when another studio develops an Artifex Mundi game and Artifex Mundi publishes it. Rather than having an alternative to the hidden object puzzles, like if you're having a hard time, if you're having a hard time finding an item, you could usually press down and do a mini game like Mahjong or something instead.
Mm-hmm.
When another studio does the development process, for whatever reason, that usually gets cut. So if you're struggling with a hidden object puzzle, sucks to be you, that's all you've got. You're just going to have to sit and look for that item. And I did find that it was particularly frustrating in this one compared to the other ones that I played, because they really cut down and like used vague wording for the object descriptions. So it would be like, it would say comb, but there would be all kinds of different combs. And you're like, okay, well, there's a regular comb, but there's also like the hair comb that women use that are intricate and detailed. And you hold, you know, like hold a bun in place. And so you're sitting there going, but which one is it? Which comb is it? And if you're playing this on casual and you don't give a fuck, you can just hit back and forth and be fine. But if you're playing on expert and you're trying not to, waste your clicks, or you're trying to get the achievement for, you know, not having any misclicks or whatever, then that can be a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
When you're like, great, this is the last thing I need. I don't know which comb to click. It can be frustrating. I like the older ones where they were definitely more careful and more descriptive. Another instance would be one that said brush, but it wanted a paintbrush, not a hairbrush.
No.
And so you're sitting there going, what? What kind of brush? You know, is it a toothbrush, a hairbrush, a paintbrush? We need a little more description. And it was the last item, and I'm just sitting there staring like, I don't know what to click. So it was definitely a little more frustrating in that regard. Otherwise, though, it was a lot of fun. It was really interesting, kept me intrigued. The ending wasn't the worst. I mean, there's been worse Artifex Mundi games, but there seems to be a trend. Again, it seems to only be popping up in the ones that are developed by other studios and published by Artifex Mundi, where like you go through the whole process of the story and then somebody else gets your reward. And then you're like, what? Well, I did all the work. I don't understand.
That'll teach you.
Yeah. So, and then you're just like, okay, well, I guess my reward is that I got to the end. This one does have a bonus chapter, though, which is, again, something that tends to get cut from the other developers. So at least there is a bonus chapter. It's relatively short. It's only maybe 4 or 5 scenes. You knock it out in about 15 minutes, even on expert. But it was all in all, it was a good experience.
Cool. So $15. What do you think?
I'm going to give it a buy it. It's at least fun. I mean, you know that you're going to get quality in the game's work, and they're easy achievements, and you're going to have an interesting story. Even if I am getting frustrated with this, everybody else getting my reward bullshit. but I do give it a buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
I'm still a fan, even at the end of 2018.
All right. We're going to tag out Cole for a little bit. Bring in Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm good.
You love those hot tags, don't you?
I do. I do love getting the hot tag into the show. Oh, man. Freaking long week before Christmas, like waiting for the work week to be done with.
You excited?
I am excited. You know, it's Christmas is exciting again because there's a child around, you know, for a long time between like the ages of 20 something and early 30 something. Christmas was pretty routine, but now there's children in the family again. So there's like excitement about Christmas and opening presents. And so, yeah, just wrapped a ton of presents and yeah, ready to go.
Anything good?
Everything's good, man. It's all good, especially if you're 3 years old. Trying to think if there's anything. I don't think there's anything game-related amongst this stuff. He has a plush Mega Man already.
That is amazing.
That's like a cool thing that he's got. But I think that's, yeah, I don't think there's any game stuff. Hopefully Dodd will be getting some game stuff. We'll see. You know. I got somebody's been buying stuff off my Amazon wish list.
No, boy.
So excited.
Well, speaking of games, you got two to talk about tonight. Are you excited? Oh, man,
Christmas came early, yes.
All right, let's start things off with Earth Defense Force 5, developed by Sandlot, published by D3 Publisher, released December 11th on PS4 for $59.99. Earth Defense Force 5 is the latest chapter in the Earth Defense Force series. Players take on the role of an elite member of a multinational military force charged with defending the Earth from an alien invasion. The third-person shooter finds players battling overwhelming hordes of gigantic insects, monsters, and other alien invaders. Tim, tell us about it.
Oh, Earth Defense Force. So actually, you know, this is a long-running series-ish at this point. It was obviously 5. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, so yeah, it goes back quite a ways. Like, the started on PlayStation 2. I've never played an EDF game before.
Really?
Yeah, it didn't really catch on here. I feel like 360 era is when like Earth Defense Force like first touched down in North America, and I started hearing people getting into it. Is this kind of, I don't know, just game that certainly is what it is. So yeah. This game's I guess to qualify, I've never played the series, have no opinion on it, going in completely fresh here, new to the series. So yeah, it's a third person shooter. It's kind of like a, I don't know, you shoot hordes of bugs in each level. lots and lots of bugs. So it's kind of like almost like a, I wouldn't call it a horde mode because it's not just like endless. It's almost like a little bit like a Dynasty Warriors game sometimes, on some maps where I'm zipping around to different objectives. And there's just, you know, hordes of enemies coming in. And just like a little bit, you know, kind of an arcadey shooter feel to it as well. But it's, you know, it is a straightforward video game ass video game. It is about, you have 4 classes to choose from. You got like your regular soldier. You have a jetpack lady with energy weapons. You have like a support character that can call in tanks and airstrikes and shit like that. And then you have like a heavy weapons guy who can carry two giant ass weapons around. And they each have different sets of lots of different weapons that unlock as you're going through the campaign here. And just, you know, you pick your character, you pick your loadout, you go in there and you kill some shit. And, yeah, because they'll come in just in, like, waves. I mean, there's, like, one, like, early level when you're on an airfield. It's like, oh, here they come. You just, like, look off to the side, and it's just this mass of, like, brown things wiggling at you, because it's literally, like, 100 giant ants charging this airfield.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, that EDF has a decently well-known reputation for being kind of, like, a campy, like almost budget game sort of deal. Like the graphics in this game are nothing to write home about. They're serviceable. Like everything is pretty crisp, but it's pretty low poly. Like the textures aren't super detailed. It's very basic, gets the job done sort of thing. You know, it's not pushing the hardware. I mean, this looks like it could be running on a 360 really. it does not, you know, compared to the graphics of our time. And because of that, yeah, like the level design is definitely on the bland side. Not really the point, I guess. You got two-player split-screen play, which is always appreciable. And then kind of the main, I don't know if the main multiplayer, but either way, there's like four-player online multiplayer. So yeah, but it's just like you go into a level, you will shoot a ton of enemies, and at some point it will be over, and you go on to the next stage. You'll unlock some new weapons. I really wish there was a way to like demo weapons real quick before you jumped, you equipped them and jumped into a level, because you just basically got to go off description and the stats. And not like the game is super hard on normal difficulty, but sometimes you just go into a level with a new weapon. You're like, oh, this sounds cool. And you're like, oh, this gun's kind of ass. There's like it really puzzled me. There's this one energy weapon that you get with the jetpack girl, which was my favorite class, for sure. But just cause of the mobility of her, where it's like, you know, normally in a shooting game, you push the button and then your gun shoots. In this, you have to like hold the button down for a few seconds and then you release the button and then your gun just shoots a beam for a little while. So it's really weird. And that gun in particular doesn't feel good. But there's like a lot of different stuff. And there's another one with that class, like her starting weapon is called the Rapier, which is a really short range, like laser blast thing, which felt really good to just fly into a swarm of enemies and just blast their faces with it, you know. But it's I think EDF is definitely a bit of an acquired taste, because it is kind of mindless. It is pretty repetitive, and just, you know, like the first at least hour of the game, it was nothing but giant ants. that was the only enemy they were throwing at me.
That sounds like an EDF game.
Yeah, I guess so. I wouldn't know. But I'm just like, man, you're not gonna. I was seeing like tooltips of enemies that were gonna come, you know, later on, and I was just like, man, when can I fight some of those? Like, I want to fight a giant spider or frog thing or whatever you're gonna toss at me. But it was just like ants, just tons of ants. I was just like, okay, all right, I'm pretty good on ants. Can we see some other stuff? It was also at that point an hour in when I saw I was at 1% completion. I'm just like, oh man, there must be a lot of missions in this game.
So it's a meaty game, at least.
I guess, but quantity over quality, question mark? But I mean, I think people that are fans of EDF know what they're getting into.
Oh yeah.
And if you're not already a fan of EDF, what you're getting into is a game that, in my opinion, seems like it's definitely more... it's something that you want to play with other people. It's something you just want to jump into a game with your friends and shoot the shit, because you don't have to pay that much attention because you're just like blasting bugs. And I think for that, it's probably really fun if you got some friends that are getting into it. Oh, goddamn, I got to talk about the best part of the game. I should probably do that, right?
Yeah, that would make sense.
That would make sense in a review. It's like my last note on the page. The fucking dialogue in this game is pretty fucking funny. I've heard that, you know, the games are kind of campy, and I just kind of thought it was in the, like, the kind of the gameplay, the setting sense of, like, oh, old monster movie, you know, alien invasion, endless hordes, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but just, like, there is this constant banter between the other soldiers you're rolling around with, and, like, it's just, it's really well done bad dialogue. Like, it's not, and it, that is a really hard mark to hit, I feel like, because usually if you're, like, leaning in to bad, like, corny dialogue, like, too hard, it just becomes eye-rolling. It's just like, okay, all right. And, but this, like, I don't know, they just, like, nail it. Just, like, the dumb stuff that they say and the way that the characters say it, like, oh, no, monsters and aliens, that's the worst. And, like, talking about their enthusiasm of joining the army and just, like, random hoops and hollers. And it's, like, constant. And I was not hearing things repeat. And it's just, like, that is also, like, it's, ah, that is good. That is a really good part of the game, was just, like, listening to the crap they were saying. Like, I was definitely laughing out loud while playing through these levels quite a bit. So that is something they definitely nailed, for sure. And that's about it. Like, EDF, it's pretty straightforward shit.
Yeah, it's always been pretty straightforward, yeah. which I've appreciated with the series. It's just, this is what you're getting, and if you enjoy it, you're going to love the hell out of it. If you don't enjoy it, it's not going to change your mind.
No.
So $60 on this one. What do you think of it?
I am going to rate it as a try it, because certainly if you have not played an EDF before, you should give one a try to see if it's up your alley. I imagine if you've already played EDF games and you're into them and you know that you're into them, you probably already own this. but it seems like a good one of those. Like, it didn't seem like there was any, like, technical hiccups. The dialogue was funny, had good variety of weapons, you know, four classes to play with, the online, the split screen. Like, that's a solid EDF game. But, yeah, if you've never played one before, it's a try. It's definitely an acquired taste. So maybe give it a rent before you give it the full $60 purchase. Didn't they used to be, like, budget games?
They were. That was one of my concerns with the game, was that it was a full-price $60 game, because they were normally, like, $30, $40
games. Yeah, I thought they were, like, $30, $40. So, I don't know. Maybe they're flying a little too close to the sun. Maybe it's something where you want to wait for it to be a little bit cheaper before you go in on it. But, yeah, it seems like a solid EDF.
I'm kind of bummed it's not on Xbox, because the previous games were on Xbox 360, as you mentioned, and a couple of them are even playable on Xbox One through the backward compatibility program. Yeah. So I was kind of hoping this one would show up there as well, but maybe in the future.
Yeah. You got it. I'm just looking that it was only released on PS4 in Japan so far. So, weird.
Maybe the Earth Defense Force 5 Game of the Year edition will release on Xbox.
Yeah. It's strange that there isn't an X-Bone version already. Maybe they're... I don't know.
We'll see. But you got one other game to talk about. That is called The Gardens Between. We are going to revisit this one. Developed and published by the Voxel Agents. Released November 29th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $19.99. It is also available as a part of Xbox Game Pass. The Gardens Between is a surreal puzzle adventure that follows best friends Arena and Frent as they fall into a mysterious world full of beautiful garden islands. Manipulate time to solve puzzles and discover the secrets of each island. Tim, what did you think about The Gardens Between?
I really liked The Gardens Between. What a lovely, pleasant experience this game was. So the game, it's a puzzle game, more or less. You have these... The two characters, the two aforementioned friends who are next-door neighbors, as it seems, get dropped into these kind of little distinct, puzzle islands. And the way that you interact with them is you press right on the stick and time moves forward. You press left on the stick and time moves backwards. And that's, like, the entire gist and hook of the game. Now, of course, there's a few things in each level that are allow you to kind of manipulate time in different ways where... Excuse me. There will be like a switch, and that will let you manipulate time of just something in particular. There's one level where there's a broken drain pipe, and there's a switch you can hit that rewinds time and closes up the drain pipe so water isn't pouring out of it. And then, you know, that's just a basic way in which you can interact with the level. Usually, like, all the levels have some kind of, like, a little mini theme to them. The game is a period piece. It seems like it's set, like, in late 80s, early 90s, just by the level of the technology that's around. There's a freaking dot matrix printer, a giant dot matrix printer in one of the levels. which is a really, you know, cool level, and I'll just talk about here. Because, like, one of the first things you do, your characters hop across, like, a number pad, which makes numbers pop up on a screen in the background. And as you're walking around the level, there's, like, a, like, rotating, like, tumblers with numbers on them. And there's one position that gives you the code. So you have to sit there, you get the code, then you walk back to the calculator. But you have to make them, you have to manipulate time forwards and backwards so they're hitting the keys in the right order. Because it only takes 6 entries, and then it clears again. So you have to hit... It's a tricky little thing, but it just shows how you know, the game is a little more complicated than you think it is of just pushing left and right. Mm-hmm. I don't think the game was hard. I didn't get stuck at all. I didn't have to look anything up. It does a really good job, I think. As most of the levels are, they kind of have like about like 3 or 4 different like tiers to them. And they always make it so that you're moving forward. And as you move forward, like, there is something that prevents you from going back. So it keeps you very focused on what you need to be focused on without, like, artificially, like, literally putting up a gate behind you that says, move forward from here. It'll just be, like, some obstacle that you can't go back over. So it's like, oh, okay, the solution I'm looking for is definitely between here and here on this level. This is what I need to concentrate on. These are the details I need to look at. Is there something in the background moving around? They do like a really good job, I think, of catching your eye, even on things like that are off to the side that you need to be paying attention to, like a switch or a flower. The flowers are important because they have these little balls of light that you have to collect in your lantern and then drop on the thing at the top of the level to move on. Game mechanics. But just like in general, they do such a good job of just gently nudging you in the right direction that I never felt stuck. I never got frustrated. It was always just like, okay, I know there's just like some little thing here that I'm not thinking about, that I'm not paying attention to. Just what is it? But not being difficult didn't make the game any less satisfying. In fact, it was just perfectly satisfying. It was just like every puzzle was like just hard enough that I would feel good about figuring it out and feel like a smarty pants and without being just like, okay, this is just, you know, too easy. I was always going to have to sit there and like kind of look and like think about it for at least a couple seconds, just be like, okay, now I can move on. Just like the whole visual design and aesthetic of the game is really cool and really good. Like the way usually you're moving up in a circle around the island, and you know, things are moving around in the background, in the foreground. There's like just really good, nice ambient music to it. The way the characters animate, and generally, you know, they just kind of move from side to side, but, you know, they'll stop and look at things and point at things. They'll, like, look at each other and point at objects. So, you know, they're telling the other, like, hey, look at this thing, we need to do something, but they're also telling you, the player, wink. so they do, it's just, like, really well done, like, up and down. It's about, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours of game. Each world is broken down into 2 to 3 stages. So, I mean, we reviewed this is a review of the PlayStation 4 version, but if you have the Switch version, it's something where you could probably knock out maybe one world or a couple stages on a lunch break or something like that. So it will lend itself to a little bit of short time play, or you can just sit down and play it in one sitting, which I probably would have
probably get through on one charge of the Switch as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Speed run.
Yeah, the charge goes out, then you just throw that Switch away. Right, buy a new one. That's how Switches work.
Exactly.
It's really good, satisfying. I heard pretty good things about it when it first came up, like back in the spring or summer or something like that. And it delivered.
Cool. So $20 on it, what is your verdict?
Yeah, my verdict is to buy it. I think some people might look at that dollar to time ratio and kind of turn their nose up, and that's up to you. But I think it's well worth it for a quality game. And if you want a little bit of extra value, you know, it's like one of those games where I finish it and I'm like, how did I not get every achievement? And I only had like 40% of them. But there's like a lot of little secret interactions in each level if you just want to give it like another playthrough to poke and prod at levels and squeeze a little bit more time out of it to get the platinum. I think will probably be worth it if you're a little cost sensitive.
Plus, for Xbox owners, if you have Game Pass, it's available on there.
You already got it. You already got it. Boom. And get Game Pass, because, like, stop buying games. Just buy Game Pass. That's what they want you to do. Game Pass
is so good.
Games as a service. Come on, Sony. You're gonna have to match them at some point, right?
Yeah, sure.
Hey, they will. Hey, if that becomes a big thing. I mean, I think that's, well, I don't know. That's getting into a whole other conversation of games as a service and where things are headed, but...
I mean, they have PlayStation Now.
Yeah, just doesn't seem as good because it's not getting, you know, they're not putting like God of War on there, you know, at release. They're not like getting the new indie game. Sometimes PlayStation Plus gets, you know, they'll put a brand new game like on release, will be there for free every now and then. And sometimes that's good, like when Fury was on there. And sometimes that's bad when Drawn to Death was on there. That game was shit.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. I think Double Dragon Neon was on there. When that came out, like ages ago at this point.
Which was incredible.
Yeah, which is a very good, very very fun, overlooked beat-em-up from quite too long ago at this point, I guess I should say.
Soundtrack's pretty nifty as well.
yeah. Who wrote that soundtrack?
Some guy. I don't know.
What's he done lately? I feel like I haven't heard anything from him.
I don't know.
Either way, yeah, Game Pass seems great. The Gardens Between is also great. Check it out.
Awesome. Yeah. Tim, it is always a pleasure having you on. I hope you have a fantastic Christmas.
Yeah, you too, man. I'll see you in a couple weeks at MAGFest.
Indeed, we will have to get our party on.
The party will be on. Xavier Woods will be there.
Are you going to try getting him to the party room?
We'll see. I don't know. I'm sure he seems like more of a guy that's going to hang around and play video games with people. But we'll see. You know, I hope I get to run into him and give him a high five.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, just that's it. You know, good high five, good handshake, doing good works. Last year at MAGFest, actually, I follow him on Twitter, and he was sad because he was not at MAGFest. I think every year he's like, oh, I wish I could go to MAGFest, but, you know, my job. And yeah. I tweeted him a picture of the network's Double Dash setup. And he sent back a sad face because Double Dash is like his favorite game. And I was like, dude, you can play Network Double Dash against people. So I'll
throw down the challenge.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he'd murder me. I haven't played Double Dash in a long time. That game's great, though. Talk about another great game. Double Dash. Holy shit. They need to. Wow, they wouldn't. But that's a game that needs like an HD update.
It does. That was such a good game.
It is. And like, you know, Mario Kart 8 is probably the best Mario Kart game. But like Double Dash was like so unique. Because of the whole two people on a cart mechanic, like it, yeah, it still stands out amongst the rest of the series, which is generally pretty similar. But yeah, so Mario Kart 8 number one, Double Dash number two. Then after that, whatever. Who cares, really?
I'm still a fan of the SNES version.
Yeah, DS. That was a banger.
Mario Kart in general was just good.
Usually. I never played the one on Wii. But you know, it's like Mario Kart 7 was probably like the most serviceable by the numbers Mario Kart, and it was still fun. So
Mario Kart. They're never bad games.
You know, I didn't like Super Circuit. You know, no. I mean Mario Kart 64 is not very good. Like, really. It was okay at the time, but there is like such a poor sense of speed in that game, and the rubber band AI is dog shit.
Bah. Rubber band AI is always dog shit.
I hate it. It just drives me nuts. Like, I could talk for hours. I gotta go to bed. I'm tired.
All right, Tim, any final words?
No. But yeah, I imagine this will be my last time on the show for the year.
Yeah, it will.
Next week I'll be, oh, gee, thanks.
We don't have anything else going on right now.
But I mean, well, next week I gotta be getting things ready for MAGFest, and there's the holidays, so I'll probably be too busy to review anything anyways, but. Yeah. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, everybody. See y'all at MAGFest and thereafter. Woo!
All right, and we're back to us. Cole, you're back. How are you doing?
I'm here. I'm good. I'm fine.
Just fine?
Just fine. Oh, it's been a day.
I know it's been a day. We've been through a lot this episode, but we only got a couple more reviews left. So just hang in there with me, okay?
We're closing in. There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Almost. We're getting there. But next game to talk about is called Hellfront Honeymoon, developed by Sky Goblin, published by Thunderful, released December 19th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for $9.99. Hellfront Honeymoon is an intense twin-stick action strategy game to be enjoyed with friends over a six-pack of fruit juice. One screen, one winner. Welcome to the Hellfront. Cole, tell us about it.
I'm going to go back and laugh at the six-pack of fruit juice part when the game is called Hellfront. Like, it should definitely not be a six-pack of fruit juice.
What would you prefer, V8? Clamato juice?
For a second, I thought you were going to say chlamydia juice.
No, Clamato.
I forgot that that's even a thing.
Yeah, why is Clamato? You know, different discussion, different show. How's Hellfront?
So Hellfront is a strategy. I don't think the game is marketed as a strategy, but it is a strategy game.
Twin stick action strategy. Okay. Did you not listen to what I fucking said?
Who are you? What are we talking about? Been a long goddamn day.
It's in the description.
It was, wasn't it?
Twin stick action strategy.
Twin stick. Okay. Yeah. So basically what happens is you have a playing field that is got little pots that are kind of honeycomb shaped. So I've been referring to them as honey pots, and I can't help it. I don't care what they're really called. That's just what they are now.
Well, they're called honey pots.
They're honey pots. That's the way it's going to, that's the cookie, and that's how it crumbles. God damn it. in each level, you have an arrangement of the honey pots that you can build on. And then there are some that are going to be in your way. There's walls that you can break down or have your soldiers plow through. But basically the idea is to build up on the available pots, eliminate the enemy, and take over everything and say, this, all these honey pots are mine now. Fuck off. It's very cut and dry. You can build on the pots that are glowing. And you can either build a barracks or a turret. So if you build a barracks, you have little army dudes that come out and they go shoot the shit out of things. And that's fantastic. And then if you have a turret, it just shoots the shit out of things. Unfortunately, the enemy's got the same thing. So you need to be careful where you are building at and how you're moving your character around the field. Because if you get shot at and you die, you have an unlimited number of respawns, but if you don't have any buildings, you can't spawn anymore. That's it. Game over. So if you're not careful and they destroy your buildings and you, you're fucked and you're out of it.
Yeah.
The actual gameplay for the story, it's got a story. It's fine. But it's not really the highlight of the game. Where it really shines the most is when you're playing it multiplayer with friends. Unfortunately, it's local only. It does not have online co-op and multiplayer. I wish it did, because I would so happily drag you motherfuckers.
I would happily be drug into this game, because holy shit, is it fun.
I would take over all your honey pots.
Bitch, you wish.
But the idea when you're playing it multiplayer is, you know, you can have up to four people. And again, it's just like with campaign. You just want to take out everybody else's troops, all their buildings, all their turrets, lower their defenses, and take over their spots until you control the whole board. It's so cut and dry and easy to play, and yet you can just lose an entire day just sitting there taking over, moving on, take over, move on. Mm-hmm. And it was so incredibly fun. It's just that it kind of runs its gamut. Once you've played it enough, you're just like, well, that's a thing and I'm done.
I will say,
unfortunately,
something I appreciate with the game is that they could have easily just done the multiplayer and sold it for $9.99.
Oh yeah,
because that's fairly cheap for an indie game anymore. But having the mission mode there, which is one or two player, you could co-op it with a friend. Mm-hmm. Having that mission mode there with like, what, 40, 50 some missions, something like that. I think 45.
There are a lot.
There's a lot. They go by fairly quickly. At least, you know, earlier on, they go by fairly quickly. Later on, they get more complex and more difficult. But, just having that there, it is such an extra bonus, because they could have easily marketed this as just a multiplayer game, and that's it. Because we've seen that with how many games.
Oh, yeah. And it does cater to, as far as replay goes, to those people who want to test their strategies and try to cut their time down. Because there's a star system. So depending on how quickly you take over everything is how many stars that you get, up to 3. And so, you know, there was nothing more dissatisfying than thinking I had done a good run and having it pop up, I had a star and a half. And I'm like, you motherfuckers, I killed everybody in record time.
You want to know what's really satisfying? Mm. Beating a stage and seeing my name ahead of yours.
You bastard. Well, shit. Now I know where my week's going.
But yeah, the game is a lot of fun. Having that mission mode there gives it lots of replayability, especially being only $10. What do you think of this one?
I give it a buy it. I had a lot of fun with it. I really did. I didn't expect to have as much fun as I did, and I didn't expect to just get pulled into it. It's such simple gameplay, and that you look at it on the surface, you're like, okay, I'm going to play this for like an hour and I'm done. But you get sucked into it and you really do get your $10 worth out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
I agree. Definitely a lot of fun and definitely worth picking up. Especially if you have a party coming up.
Yes. Make somebody play that shit with you.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, next game to talk about is called The Council Episode 5 Checkmate, developed by Big Bad Wolf, published by Focus Home Interactive, released December 4th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $6.99. The complete season is available for $29.99. Finish the adventure in The Council Episode 5 Checkmate, where kings fall, pawns rise, and the choice, as always, is yours. Like the other episodes, Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say. The Council Episode 5 is, amazingly, still a third-person choose-your-own-adventure game. Who'd think over the span of 1 to 5 games that they would all be the same type of game? Crazy, am I right? Oh, Dark Mika, you so crazy. You're still playing as Louis de Rocher. You remember what the fuckness of the last episode? Yeah, just yeah. The story has gone down the rabbit hole something fierce. You found the spear, and you obviously didn't get off the island, or this episode wouldn't exist, would it? Instead, you have to deal with demons who are indeed the two main conversation starters in this giant meeting of leaders. Whether you escape or not, or even live or die, is all up to the choices you've made thus far. Honestly, I have a lot of praise for the game, not just this episode, but for all of the games. The visuals are amazing, the voice acting is superb, the puzzles I'm in between on, they're very good and very, very difficult, unless you know a lot of Catholic and Greek religious text, as the puzzles are very much based on that. It's not just the minor things like who built the Ark or anything. It's much deeper and harder, and it requires a lot of logic to deal with them. Or I guess a lot of trial and error. I like that they're so logical, but for me personally, they were stupidly hard because I didn't understand the clue since I only know the basic amount of stuff relating to said religions. So on one hand, I like the puzzles. I like that the puzzles are in-depth and hard, but on the other, I don't like how focused it is in this one area because it's hard to figure out. Thanks to the context, even though thanks to the story, it makes sense. Wow, that's a run-on sentence.
A little bit.
The interactions between you and the other characters, this is one of the best games for that. They are fantastic. The story is honestly the one area where the game falters overall, at least to me, and that started at the very end of Episode 3, like literally the very end of it, but it continued into Episodes 4 and 5. At first, it's rather Sherlockian, everything is grounded in logic, and it all makes sense in our world, could even be almost realistic, no less. And then suddenly, they pull a curveball that brings it from Sherlock to the Passion of the Christ mixed with The Exorcist, and it just doesn't really work. The pacing is good individually for each game, and even between all the episodes as a whole, but the story's sudden drastic departure from reality 60% through the game throws it off for me, and honestly, I didn't like the story for Episodes 4 and 5 in relation to the first three. There's a thread and the story follows it, so it's not like they just changed the story. It's obviously where they were intending to go with how well put together they are, but it just doesn't make sense logically. It's like reading a book and it's in English, every character is English, they're like the whitest part of the US, then suddenly you flip a page and it's all French and German for the remainder of the book. Even if it continues the story, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I stated I didn't like the shift between episodes 3 and 4, and I still don't like the shift, and I probably never will. And episode 4 and 5 had started with different 3 episodes that were more in line with this theme, I'd be all for it. As they weren't bad in and of themselves, but the overall cohesion to me went straight to hell between all the episodes thanks to these last two. It's on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $7. Well, at least for the final episode. The others are $7 each, or again, 30 for the whole series. If you've been playing them, it's worth getting. After all, this is the end of the story. If you haven't bought the game and need to buy all of it, I'm a bit more leery on this purchase. It's like the first half of one movie and the latter half of another in two completely different genres. If you're fine with that, then it's worth it. If you're not, then it's not. The hang times for things have been improved since the previous episode. The hang times? What do you mean the hang times?
I'm assuming the load times while you're hanging out waiting for it to load.
Maybe. Oh, Dark Mika. And I didn't notice any real issues with the voice acting or subtitle differences in this episode, so my issues with the last episode seem to be dealt with. Really, it just comes down to whether you're fine with the thematic change completely changing the overall game and story. The first 3 episodes and the last 2 episodes are both great, and if they were separate games, they would be great. But as halves of the same game, it's too erratic, so as an overall, I don't like the story anymore myself, which kind of makes me feel bad because I loved it at first.
Damn.
So, it sounds like it's just the weird thematic shift is what threw her off.
Yeah. Which happens. I've seen a lot of episodic games where they seem very much like they're on one path and then they deviate hardcore and you're like, what the fuck were they thinking? Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, it seems like 3 great episodes and then 2 great episodes, but not 5 great episodes together.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like.
If you can deal with a shift like that, it sounds worth picking up. And again, I've seen it on sale for under $20, so it might be worth picking up anyway.
Hmm. I like sales. Sales are good.
By the way, the Xbox winter sale just started.
Oh, is there anything good?
There's a lot of shit. Like a whole lot of shit. Like way too much to go over.
I know The Sims 4 is currently on sale on Origin for $5, and tomorrow is payday.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, for PC, because I don't have it. My old PC couldn't run it, and now I can.
There you go.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Anyway, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Final Star. Seems fitting for the last game, huh?
It does.
Developed and published by Dynamic Voltage Games, it released December 20th on Xbox One for $14.99. Only one sun remains in the known universe. As more distant civilizations rally to the final star, it was only a matter of time before a hostile alien race would arrive to seize control. You're all that remains of the fleet tasked to protect it, and only an alliance with the dangerous mercenary guild can get you the upgrades needed to fight off the invading forces. Cole, tell us about it.
So this is a 2D shmup. It is based on a Final Star Force game that came out in 1992 by Decmo. Wow. Yeah. I did research.
Hot damn.
Yeah. So, it's very simple as far as gameplay goes. You choose your missions while you're in your ship. You have, like, you're surrounded by the planets and the galaxy around you. It is the last star in the universe, and the galaxy that is surrounding it contains all life, and basically everybody just needs to scavenge for scrap and resources, and so there's a lot of struggle for who controls the resources, and you're fighting off this alien invasion who wants to come steal your shit. You just have each once you pick the mission that you're going to run, you have 3 different ships that you can choose from, and they have different abilities. Some fire a little faster, some have a little more health. Then once you've chosen your ship, then you carry out the mission. There are several different mission types that you can play, but they have varying degrees of difficulty. Thankfully, the game is very good at pointing out that if you're going to get fucked up in a mission and that you shouldn't play it, there are straight up missions called suicide missions. Mm-hmm. And they will tell you you're going to die. good luck. The whole point of the suicide missions is just collect as much scrap as you can before you die. Death's inevitable. It's just how far are you going to make it beforehand? Yeah. There are the main story missions, which progress the story of the invasion. And then there are some bonus little missions that will pop up as you carry on. I think that the difficulty shift between the main story missions and the bonus missions that come up, though, is ungodly high.
Oh, yeah.
Just there were times where I was like, I can't find the next story mission because you have to look around at the stars and the planets to see where your mission is. And there's not a whole lot of explanation of, hey, you're looking for the gray imp, dumbass. Which would be kind of nice because I was like, okay, well, this is the first mission I see, so I guess this is the one I'm supposed to play. How did I go from a mission that was half a star in difficulty to one that's 3.5?
Yeah.
And then I got fucked up a lot. and it took me a little bit to realize, oh, no. These missions are just over my head. Literally, yeah,
those are missions you'll get to eventually.
Yeah, they pop up early, but you are not meant to go play those yet. It's quite a tease. You're like, oh, I'm gonna go get all this good shit for my ships, and no, you're not. You're just gonna get dead. One thing that I liked particularly well is that you can re-roll your rewards before you take on a mission, so it will show you, okay, you're going to get bonus speed for this ship, and you're going to get bonus attack for this ship, and you're going to get, whatever it pops up as for the three different options. And if you feel like you're getting a reward that you don't necessarily need, like there's one ship that has an excess of speed, and so getting extra speed for that ship is like, why?
Yeah.
You can re-roll it and try your hand to see if you can get something better before you take on the actual mission. So it gave you a little bit of control over how you were going to build your ships up before you kept going. One of my biggest complaints is even on normal difficulty, even on the easier missions, it can be a little overwhelming. It is, you know, it's a bullet hell and it's supposed to be a bullet hell. They do give you a weapon that you can pull your left trigger and it will clear out some of the bullets. But even still, that uses so much energy and you don't have enough to get you through some of the levels. Even after you've upgraded, yeah. You're just like, I can't, there's literally nowhere for me to go. if it's there, I couldn't find it, but there's no option to turn on where you can see your hitbox. So I never could figure out where I was actually trying to protect. And I'm like, okay, I'm fine. I'm going to get through this. Never mind. I lost my health. Okay. Let's try again. Oh, no, that hit me there too.
There's a couple of things I wish the game had. The hitbox is one of them. Mm-hmm. The other is the game is story heavy, so there's a lot of talking going on. There's an option that you could hold down the B button to completely skip a conversation, but you can't hit a button to just speed up the text.
Yep, that's another thing that I had an issue with, too. Because you can read it, and then you just have to sit there and wait for it.
Yeah, I would much rather have that option to, like, tap the B button to make all the text show up.
Yeah.
So I could read it at my own speed, or hold the B button to just completely skip it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, too. I was very surprised at how light on options this game was. I mean, the shmups don't have a lot of requirements. They're pretty cut and dry, but there's a few things that you would just like the option to finagle, and you have nothing in this one. It's just sound and good luck. There are different difficulties, but again, I thought that the difficulty spiked unbelievably high, just between 0.5 star and 3.5 stars. I didn't even touch anything with 5 stars.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine playing it on the higher difficulties, and I would have liked even an easier difficulty, honestly, because I'm a bitch. And sometimes I just want to get through it and not die 700 times. Like, I don't want to talk about how many times it took me just to get through the tutorial, because the end boss at the tutorial, you have to shoot him in a specific spot. And I've never seen a shmup that doesn't let you just, you hit it, good job. But you had to hit it in the specific area.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it for some, I'm like sitting there going, okay, I'm throwing everything I've got at it. Why am I dying immediately? And it's because it does not give a fuck if you hit it in the wing. Who do you think you are?
Hit it in that one spot.
Where the fucking bullets are coming out at.
That's the challenge.
That's an excessive challenge for a tutorial.
True.
And it was just frustrating. Like, by the time I would get to the boss in the tutorial, I would only have 5 hit points left. I didn't do well. And the weird thing was after I did the tutorial, I was like, why is this easy all of a sudden? Because the game, the first couple missions were easier than the goddamn tutorial. So they just, they could use a little more balancing as far as difficulty goes in my book. But besides that, I did have a lot of fun with it, and I had fun trying out the different weapons. I thought the mechanic for choosing to focus fire or spread your fire was so cool, with using the right trigger to either pull it back or push it forward.
Mm-hmm.
to control your
satellite. You mean the right stick.
Yeah, right stick. I'm sorry. It's a long day. But the fact that you literally pulled them back or pushed them forward to focus fire, that was so cool and really well done.
And I like that in the focus fire mode, it also slowed you down.
So yeah,
you could have more precision.
Yeah, and you couldn't just like spam it because you had increased difficulty, or not difficulty, but damage at that time.
Yeah.
So you couldn't just sit and spam it and go slow the whole time because it slowed you down and you wouldn't be able to dodge. So I like that. It was just one of those where it had a healthy balance of things to fuss about and things to enjoy. But all in all, I still thought it was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to playing more of it. I really do want to get upgraded enough to try some of those harder levels without getting Facebooked in the first 3 seconds.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, this is really the only way to put it.
Well, then $15 on it. What is your verdict?
I give it a recommend to try it. It does have some squeaky moments and some things that I would like to see changed. A little balance goes a long way, but it is a lot of fun. And I think there's certainly going to be hardcore shmup fans who are rolling their eyes at me and going, oh, this, she's saying it's too hard. You know, good luck to you.
Yeah.
But I did have a lot of fun. I do just want to see it balanced a little more.
I agree. Some balance would be good. Those little additions that we mentioned would be helpful. Yeah. Being able to see your hitbox, being able to speed up the text. But having such a meaty campaign and RPG elements in a shmup, I think is really cool. And I agree that I would give it a recommend to try it.
Good. I like when we agree.
It's good shit.
I dropped my pen.
Proud of you. Well, the good thing is we're done, so
yay.
That is it for this episode. We're gonna play a couple more Christmas songs. You're not gonna be back for like 2-3 weeks, so
no. Three? Really? What am I gonna do with my life?
I still don't know how long I'm taking off. We'll see.
Oh wow.
We'll see how recharged I am after MAGFest, if I want to jump right back into things or if I want to enjoy another week off. We'll see.
I'm on vacation. I'm gone fishing.
Hell yeah.
That's exactly what I'm going to end up doing. We all know it.
I got some game offers in today. It's like, hey, do you want to check out this game on the Switch? And I'm just like, nah, we're taking time off. I'll be back. We got one more episode next week on Thursday. I believe we're going to release it. We're not going to be recording our usual stuff on Monday and Tuesday, obviously, because of the holiday. Yeah. So the episode's going to be a little later. We're going to have a whole bunch of reviews on that episode to look forward to, some good stuff coming up. But do you have any final words to end the year for yourself?
Ho, 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 motherfuckers!
in smoke. That's where I wanna be. 'Cause I'm hanging out with Joe Kim and I gotta pee. I just ran out of Fritos and this show's just too long. So I take a toke, all my cares go up in smoke. Up in smoke, please do not damage my calm. I just got off a breakup phone call with your mom.
Your mom, get it?
Ha! She spent all my money. Now I'm broke.
Sucker.
So I take a toke.
Right.
And all my cares go up in smoke.
Up in smoke. Dump the bong water in that bucket, because there's more to life than try it, buy it or fuck it. This show is normally depressing, except this week Jacob's here and that rules.
Fuck Jacob.
Tune in for a stream that's at best half-assed.
Take you all day to half-ass it.
And don't climb that flight of stairs or else you're gassed. This is episode 420 of the SML Podcast.
Fuck this! Fucking jingle bells. Kiss my entire ass. Merry fucking Christmas!